Hey everybody, this is Talon Williams from Movement Radio, and I want to talk about a very special offer that my buddy Sean Thompson is giving away for you guys with Thompson Personal Training. Now, I've been working with Sean for the past couple of weeks, been working out, been working on cardio, working on cardiovascular stuff, boxing, in-ring stuff, and dude is the truth. He is going to give you guys the best possible workout you can possibly ask for. And if you guys want to take advantage of this deal, check him out on Facebook. He is giving away 1 month. All you got to do is sign up for 3 months and you get the fourth month absolutely free. So check him out on Facebook, Sean Thompson, or go to Thompson's Personal Training on Facebook and see what it's all about. Now, back to the show.
Good evening. This is a presentation of Movement Radio. Welcome to another edition. Here are your hosts, Chip Hazard and Talon Williams.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of The Hauntings Of right here on Movement Radio. I am Talon Williams, Chip Hazard by my side. And today, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be discussing the hauntings of the state of Missouri. So, Chip, what can we look forward to in this episode of The Hauntings Of?
Well, the state of Missouri has many well-known hauntings to call its own, including the famous tale of demonic possession to which the famous motion picture The Exorcist was based upon.
Yay.
Yes, there are dozens of interesting tales of paranormal activity coming out of the Show Me State, and many of the locations are open to the general public if you are brave enough to pay them a visit. Let's dig a little bit deeper into about 10 of the most haunted places in the state of Missouri.
Yes, indeed. Excuse me. And then we will kick it off with the first one, Knob Noster. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Sounds right to me.
Knob Noster is a small Missouri town close to Whiteman Air Force Base. As you may know or may not be aware, The word knob is an old term for hill or smaller mountain. This is where the town gets its name from. So this is also where a local spooky legend is centered. You see, it is said that one time there was a hermit who lived up on the hill, avoiding the rest of the town as much as possible. This guy sounds like he's ahead of the time.
Right.
In fact, he had a slave who would run any errand he wanted into the town. Now, the slave was well liked by the townsfolk, so when he went missing, they became concerned, especially when the hermit came into town to run his own errands. Some of the locals asked him about the slave, but he simply scowled and stormed off, triggering the rumor that he had murdered the young man. A few days later, it was a terrible storm, and witnesses saw a lantern moving up the hill just before lightning struck. The following day, the hermit's body was discovered on the hill, his face frozen in terror. To this day, people still see the light of a lantern bobbing up and down the hillside on a stormy night. Some people even believe that it was the slave himself who came back and killed the hermit. Yeah, that one. Huh. Whew, yeah, that one's a little bit. Yeah. You know, I despise slavery. So, if this guy was treating this young boy like a slave and treating him like shit, you know what? You get what you deserve. But it's you know, it's so strange because they talk about, like, it was on a stormy night. Going to, you know, when you see people legitimately seen a lantern moving up the hill, you know, then they found the hermit dead the next day with his face frozen in fear. Almost like the movie The Ring. You remember the movie The Ring?
I do.
And anytime Samara would kill, take her victim, you know, the face is all distorted, like, you know, like that whole looking thing. So... Yeah, this one's different. How did you feel about this story?
Well, so Okay, so here's my thing. Could this have just been the hermit walking up the hill and maybe he couldn't make it, got stuck or whatnot, and knew he was going to freeze to death that particular night, and that's why his face was frozen in terror?
Possibly. That is definitely a possibility. It could also be a possibility that he was murdered. But, you know, like, I mean, how dark is this town? I mean, obviously, I mean, if there's people who live there, even a small town has at least one street light, right? You know, you would think.
I mean, yeah, but what year does it say this is? They might not have had.
It never gave a year.
Yeah, they might not even have known what street lights were back then.
Possibly. I mean, it had to be at least during slavery, because the man owned a slave. So,
right.
You know, I mean, so it had to have been way, at least 1800s, you would think, you know.
You would think, I mean, slavery was well into the 1900s, though, really. I mean, you got to think that, what the civil rights movement, I mean, it's kind of still going on, but I mean, it was only like, what, 40 or 50 years ago?
Yeah.
What, like the 60s?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, 40, 50 years ago. I mean, there are people that were slaves, or not necessarily slaves, but people that were like prohibited from going to like white schools or whatnot that are still alive today.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it could have been fairly recent, but I don't know.
Yeah.
That one was it did make me, you know, it triggered me to think of the ring for sure, though.
Yeah. Does it sound more like an urban legend than a haunting, though? Do you think
very much like an urban legend?
Yeah, something that they would use to, like, you know, maybe, hey, let's go to this place. I heard that there's this cool ghost story, you know, or something along those lines, you know?
Right.
I mean, it could happen that way, I guess. All right. Yeah. So anyway, you got the next one?
Yep. Next up, we're going to talk about the Jesse James Farm in Kearney, Missouri. So almost everyone's heard of Jesse James, right?
Yes.
So it'll be no surprise that the James family farm has been the scene of a great deal of heartache and violence.
Yes.
This has led to the farm becoming one of the most haunted places in Missouri. Okay?
Okay.
The farm is open for public tours, so if you wanted, you could book a tour and go check out the James family farm. And on these public tours, you will learn how Frank and Jesse James were raised and how Jesse was beaten and almost hung by Union soldiers searching for his brother Frank.
Yep.
His brother was also killed on the farm by a bomb thrown by guards searching for Jesse and Frank. So the third brother there.
Yeah.
Jesse was actually buried on the farm following his death, and his mother would charge visitors to come visit his grave and take some pebbles from it. That's a bit morbid, don't you think?
A little bit morbid, yeah. A little bit, yeah. It's a little strange.
Hey. You know, I know my son was this famous Wild West myth or whatnot, but hey, y'all want to see where he is buried? Come on over here. 25 cents will get you a pebble off of his grave.
Shit. Then, hey, but you got to think, back then in the damn, what is it, 1880s? I mean,
yeah.
That, I mean, 25 cents would probably be a lot of fucking money back then.
Right. So since, though, his actual remains have been dug up and relocated to the Mount Olive Cemetery.
Yeah.
That certainly hasn't stopped the hauntings, though. People have reported hearing horse hooves, gunshots, and disembodied voices and whispers around the farm.
Right.
Sounds more like another urban legend to me, though.
Yeah, from the standpoint that,
I mean, you got the legend of Jesse James, and now, you know, here's this urban legend of the haunting of Jesse James's home. Right. You know, it's kind of, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, which Jesse James and you know, the Jesse James gang has always been very rooted in history. There's been so many movies made about it. There's actually an episode, I mean, I've told you this several times, that one of my favorite TV shows of all time, they don't make it any, the show has since been canceled, but one of my favorite TV shows of all time is the TV show Deadliest Warrior, where they take two warriors from history and they battle them in a simulated, you know, arena to see who would come out on top. And in episode three of season two, they actually did the Jesse James game versus the Al Capone game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they had Joey Dillon, who's a champion gunslinger, and J.W. Wiseman, who's a sharpshooting expert and a historian on Jesse James, as the Jesse James team. And they had Meyer Lansky II, who's a mafioso descendant, and Johnny Lufrato, who is an authority on Al Capone. They did a it was those guys basically bringing their expertise to the simulation. And the Jesse James gang, out of what they do is they basically test their weapons, they test their armor, everything like that, and they simulate 1,000 battles, and whoever wins those battles based off the simulation with different variants and things like that is who they declare as the deadliest warrior out of the two, whatever. For that episode, Jesse James' gang did beat Al Capone's gang by a total of 544 to 456. So, which, that's just a little bit of nerd, you know, fantasy, you know, what people, you know, it's just something to see what would happen, you know, which, I mean, if you have a Winchester revolver, and then a Colt revolver, you know, a Winchester rifle and a Colt revolver that you can pull out and shoot within less than half of a second, you're pretty good. I mean, and let's be honest, a Bowie knife compared to a stiletto, I mean, come on, man. If you got a choice between a knife or a stiletto, which one are you going to use to really hack somebody up? You're going to take the Bowie knife. Really, the only good weapon that Al Capone had that was way more powerful than any of the weapons that Jesse James were carrying was the Thompson submachine gun, you know, which had the most kills out of the whole simulation at 338. But, you know, he was, the Jesse James gang was known for bank robbing and murder and things like that. Their terror reigned from 1866 to 1876. And, you know, 20,000 dollars back then in the 1880s or the 1870s was, like, comparable in today's money, a shit ton of money, you know.
Right.
So for to have that history behind Jesse James, because he is so well known, and there's been movies and television shows. I think, God, what was it? The Assassination of Jesse James was a movie with Brad Pitt. I think with Brad Pitt and God. Casey Affleck, I want to say that's who it was.
That sounds right.
Yeah, there was another movie in 2001, American Outlaws, where the role of Jesse James was played by Colin Farrell. Another one. And then there was another one from like the 1970s. The Great North. Yeah, I'm looking it up now. The Great Northfield, Minnesota Raid. And where Jesse James was played by Robert Duvall. So, yeah, so Jesse James has been around. They've been making stuff about Jesse James dating all the way back to 1921, Jesse James Under the Black Flag, back all the way back to the back. But for this particular haunting, it does seem like they would probably manifest and fabricate a lot of it. If you do have tours where they're public and people are coming to, you know, see the grave of Jesse James and the history right. of the people. This one does sound a little bit more fabricated because there is so much history, and because the Jesse James is more of a historical figure, maybe infamous would probably be the best way to describe him now. Just like with anyone who, you know, I mean, Charles Manson is infamous. You know, he, even though he technically didn't murder anybody, motherfucker was crazy, you know, and he, you know, had a following, even though it was more of the infamous variety, you know, or the notorious, I think would probably be a better word instead of infamous, maybe notorious, or nefarious, or whatever other crazy word you want to come up with. But right. Yeah, this definitely seems like the kind of thing that would be embellished a little bit.
Definitely sounds like it to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I went a little bit of a rant there. I kind of wanted to give you guys a little history. When I talk about Deadliest Warrior, you know, I'm always, Chip knows, I'm a big fan of it. You know, I like talking, which I still think the weirdest episode is the final episode of that whole thing. If a vampire bites a zombie, does a zombie become a vampire, or does a vampire become a zombie? But we'll have that discussion hopefully on another episode upcoming soon in 2021. That being said, let's jump on to the next one. This next one is pretty interesting. If you're a fan of any military service whatsoever, this is the Jefferson Barracks and Cemetery in St. Louis, Missouri. Now, the Jefferson Barracks in St. Louis has been an active military base since 1826. Given its age and the fact that it's adjoined to a national cemetery, there's no surprise that a few people have actually called this place their haunted homes. The cemetery apparently has a little child ghost, here we go, who wanders aimlessly around among the headstones. There are also two ghosts who appear at sundown and acknowledge each other before vanishing again. Almost like, you know, these people died in combat and he's seeing an old friend or something. One is said to be in the clothing of a Confederate soldier, while the other is wearing the uniform of a Buffalo soldier, more specifically the Black Troop. In the barracks themselves, it seems to be the post headquarters where the paranormal activity is centered. One local soldier spotted a light coming on in one of the rooms one night and went over to the window to check it out. When he looked inside, he saw a military officer in 19th century dress sitting at a desk writing by candlelight. He then stood up and then walked away and vanished. Well, fuck. That's something that you don't hear about every day. Right. Yeah. But could you imagine, though, like you see a light on, you go in there to look, and it's just some dude riding by candlelight, and he just gets up and walk away. Like, yeah, nothing to see here. Anyway, how did you feel about this one?
I mean, we're getting there.
Right, right.
When it comes to, like, paranormal stuff, we're getting there. Yeah. You know.
Right.
So.
And anytime you're dealing with anything military, which we've talked about several different military establishments on various episodes. This one, a little bit more, because it is Missouri, and Missouri, as a lot of people know, is a border state between the North and the South. So you could definitely see Civil War, you know, because Missouri was, again, like I said, a border state right there in the middle. You know, maybe it was half of it was, you know, Confederate, half of it was Union, whatever. So, you know, right. Could this be an instance where the Buffalo soldier and the Confederate soldier maybe kind of see eye to eye with each other for once, you know? And maybe it wasn't until after they died that they truly understand the value of love and friendship and respect.
It's very possible.
Very possible indeed, you know. This one's intriguing, you know, because of the history and the, you know, anytime we're talking history, wars and things like that, it's always interesting, especially if those apparitions. The one about the little child ghost wandering aimlessly, that is like, who's the child looking for? Is it looking for a specific person? Is it just looking for someone to talk to? Is anytime you deal with the child ghost, we've had this discussion several times, the child ghost, or the one ghost you really feel sorry for, but at the same time you don't want to fuck with, because these little possessed things can probably kill you. But anyway,
The child ghost is always the that kicker for me.
Very much so. So we're gonna jump on to the very next one. Bubba, you got it?
Yep. Next up, we're gonna talk about Ravenswood House. And this is in Bunsington, Missouri.
We'll go with it.
So Ravenswood is a grand mansion that was built in 1880. Mm-hmm. So a little over what? Not just
what, a little over 200 years.
No, not quite 200 years, because we're not in 2080 yet.
About 140.
Yeah. So it was built in 1880 by Nadine and Charles Leonard. The Leonards were a couple who loved nothing more than entertaining. Sounds like a couple of Leonards that I know.
Right?
Yep. They would often string lanterns through the trees, hire an orchestra, and invite all of their friends to dance the night
that
away.
That definitely sounds like some Leonards we know. Shout out to Chronic Conversations. Go check them out on Anchor. Go ahead.
For sure. So Nadine remained in her beloved home until she died at the age of 90 years old, and it seems that perhaps her spirit has never left.
Ooh, okay.
Okay. Yes. A family servant tried to enter Nadine's bedroom after her death to collect some clothing, only to find the door locked from the inside.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It was agreed that the lock would have to be broken, but by the time the servant returned with the required tools, the door was already open.
Ah.
Yeah, so there you go.
Okay.
So Christmas ornaments are often thrown down the stairs. So apropos right here around Christmas time. A broken music box randomly plays music despite not having worked for years. And some visitors say that they can hear music and laughter from the lawns, reminiscent of Nadine's lavish parties. And
something tells me this Nadine did not want to let go of this lifestyle. Like,
no, I mean, not at all.
Talking, I mean, I'll put it to you this way. If there is a such thing as a friendly ghost, like Casper the Friendly Ghost, like if this is Nadine the Friendly Ghost, shit. You know, this could be a place you can go. Like, could you imagine like a college like turnout or something like that? Like about 30 or 40 college kids, you know, going to this place, you know, post COVID, of course, you know,
right.
Going to this place, you know, it's like, oh man, we heard a lot of cool places. Here's the thing. I don't know how much Nadine would appreciate other people coming into her house. So let's backtrack that for just a second. I mean, if you look at the picture and it's taken at night, and the house is a beautiful looking house. It looks very gothic, looks very 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 nice and beautiful. That one tree in the front yard with the broken limbs and it looks tattered. It looks like it, you know, looks like something,
just kind of an old
tree. Yeah, it's an old tree, you know. It looks like it's got like an actual it looks like somebody just bit a chunk out of it, or it looks like a screaming tree or something. But it actually looks like a pretty cool house. And Chip, if anybody wants to take a look at this picture we are currently looking at right now, where can they go check it out at?
Well, if they wanted to, they could go check it out at hauntedrooms.com. Again, we are not sponsored, but we hope to be one
day. Yes, indeed. So shout out to hauntedrooms.com, man, for providing us with all this information that we are currently giving you guys right now. So, again, how do you feel about this? I mean, if you driving by, not even really thinking, it's like, man, I hear this music. Man, they laughing. They cutting up. They over there having a good old time. Let's go over there and check it out. And then you get there and you don't see nobody. What's the first thing you thinking?
Wondering if my radio is broke.
Right.
But no, seriously. Yeah, that's, I don't know. It's funny because the first thing when it comes to like eeriness is the thought of hearing something.
Right.
And then going to locate the whatever you thought you heard and it not, there's nothing there.
Yeah. I'm sure we've all been there at some point where you would, you thought you heard something and then you like, man, I could have swore I heard something. Like, you ever been in like Walmart or something? You could have swore someone said your name. You're looking around like, did someone say my name? Like, you know.
Man, this shit happens to me all
every
the time.
Damn day. Here's the thing. Like, we were in Walmart. Like, this happened about, I don't know, a month ago or something. I'm walking through Walmart and I kept hearing, Tyler! Turn and I'm looking, I'm like, the fuck, I'm hearing my name, but what the fuck? Nothing. I kept on walking. Talent. Next thing I know, this little 5-year-old kid just runs by me. And his dad's running behind him. It's like, Talent, get your ass back here before I kick your ass. And I'm like, I didn't move, I just stood still. And he picked up.
Yeah, I mean, what do you do?
Right,
I'm
just like, I ain't doing shit. You know, I literally just walked away. He picked the son up. He's like, Talent, I told you, I'm gonna tell your mom when we get back to the house. I'm like, oh God, you know. But still, and right. Then that's the funny case scenario. Obviously, you know, I didn't know there was another. I didn't know anybody else would name their kid Talent. So hey, kudos to that kid. But yeah, I mean, you do have that feeling sometimes. I mean, even like when you're watching like. A horror movie or something, you know, and you're so into the movie, you hear something like behind you or something. And I've done it with my mom several times, like we watched some movie or whatever, some horror movie, and then all of a sudden, like I'll slap the wall or something. She'll be like, ah, I'll kill you down. I'm an asshole, right? Like that. But anyway, but yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like this place would be the place to go party if you chose to do so. You know, if you choose to hang out with haunted spirits, maybe this could be the place for you. You know,
most cool
place
definitely.
To shoot a Marilyn Manson video, probably, but who knows? All right, so the next one we're talking about the Governor's Mansion, and this is in Jefferson City, Missouri. Now, the Governor's Mansion has been home to Missouri governors since 1872, with Thomas Crittenden and his family among the first to live there. Now, his beloved daughter Caroline was born there in 1873, but sadly, she died at the age of 10 after contracting diphtheria. I believe we've talked about this particular disease before, right? Because on a previous episode. Yeah. So, Governor Crittenden never really was the same after her death. If we fast forward around a century, that is when the first paranormal reports started to come in at the governor's mansion. A restoration project was underway at the mansion, and one workman was up in the attic. He came downstairs and asked the housekeeper who the little girl was that was playing up there while he worked. The housekeeper said that no one was in the house but him. Upon realizing that his companion was a ghost, he refused to return to the mansion. I do not blame you, Mr. Housekeeper, sir. imagine just for the sake of argument, you walk into a house, and maybe it's a house that you're looking into buying or something like that. You go up into the attic, and you look, and you see a little girl up there just playing. She looks at you, smiles, waves. I'm sliding down the. I'm going back down. I'm like, nope. We getting the fuck out of this house. I ain't staying. Fuck that shit. I am gone. You know. You gonna stay in the governor's mansion after that? Nope.
Nope.
Not you. Not me neither. You know. I don't give a damn if the spirit's polite. I'm getting the fuck. You just mad? You walk in there and it's like, hey, Talon, you look good. You lost weight. Fuck you, I'm leaving. You know, like, I don't want that in my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's some paranormal activity shit. I don't want that. That's scary. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Too much, man. Way too much. But again, we're going back to the old trope of the 10-year-old, you know, dying at such a young age, you know, and I mean, for the governor, for Mr. Crittenden to never really be the same after her death. I mean, what parent would not be the same after losing their child, you know? I mean, that's right. Something that I can't fathom it, man. I cannot fathom it. You know, my son's 7, my daughter's not even a year old yet, and if I lost either one of them, I definitely would change in terms of mentally, physically, like, definitely mentally. Like, I wouldn't know how to handle it, you know? And I hope one day I don't have to handle it, you know? But again, you know, it's one of those things where you just got to pray for, you know, safety and hope that the kids are going to be cool and be okay. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're going to scale it back a little bit. Let's go to the very next one. Because this one looks like it'll be interesting.
Yep, we're going to talk. next up, we're going to talk about Smollett's Cave in Ava, Missouri. Okay. So in the 1920s, two ladies were walking near Spring Creek when a man stepped out from the side of the road. He was headless and had a pair of shoes strung around the stump of his neck and a Bible on his shoulder. All right, so at that point, I'm going to turn and run the other way because I am fucking done. Right? Completely fucking done. All right. So the women ran off, but a short time later, the apparition appeared again, this time to two boys out riding their bicycle.
Okay.
Other reports state that a horse with a headless rider has galloped towards them on the same path.
Hmm.
Yes. It is said that this is a ghost who lives in Smollett's Cave and that passersby can hear him tapping away as he cobbles shoes. I almost said stone. As he cobbles shoes. This has earned the apparition of the nickname of the Headless Cobbler.
I'm sorry, didn't Johnny Depp do a movie like this?
So there is an urban legend of the Headless Horseman.
The Tale of Sleepy Hollow and all that, yeah.
Yeah, Johnny Depp did a movie called Sleepy Hollow. So this sounds like this town's version of the Headless Horseman.
It really does. Could this been had maybe, because it's the 1920s, And please forgive me, I don't know exactly when the legend of the Headless Horseman was created. I'm sure a quick Google search, but if the Headless Horseman story was created after the Headless Horseman, okay. So it's been around for years before that. The Headless Horseman is a fictional character. Is a fictional character from the 1820s, a short story entitled "The Legend of Sleepy Hollow." Okay, so maybe goes back for. Okay, so it definitely goes back further than that. Okay, so yeah, you could even you can even be the Headless Horseman in World of Warcraft and Skyrim, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, hey, you know what? I mean, that's just a fun fact I looked up, you know? But anyway. So, yeah, I mean, it does sound a little bit... I'm not going to say it sounds fine. This one definitely has a bit of a different ambiance. You know, for the fact that it's headless. Why did he have the shoes strung around the stump of his neck?
And the Bible on his shoulder.
That one was a little bit. Is this, you know? I don't know. Like, what was the significance of the Bible? You know, was this an apparition of, you know, some type of, you know, was this an apparition of God? Maybe, you know, and maybe God warning people to stay out of the cave or something like that. Very possible, maybe?
I mean, good. Very possible.
Yeah, that one's different. That one's that one's definitely off the beaten path, so to speak. The gallop. Yeah, no pun intended. Yeah. So, the next thing we're going to talk about, this is in Boomville, Missouri, and it is the Thespian Hall. I want to say I'm pronouncing that Thespian Hall. So,
not lesbian. Thespian.
Yeah, that was a Saturday Night Live skit, or it was a Mad TV. It was one of them. Anyway, it's like, oh my God, so they told me that you were a thespian? No, Mom, I'm a lesbian. Anyway, it was the 90s. Mad TV did all kind of crazy shit. Shout out to Deborah Wilson, by the way. She was the funniest one. Not really, Michael McDonald was. But anyway, so Thespian Hall in Boonville holds the distinction of being the oldest operating theater west of the Appalachian Mountains. It was built in 1857 and has served as a theater, a dance hall, a library, a movie theater, a stable, an ice skating rink, a church, and even a Civil War hospital. It is no wonder the building is said to be haunted. Well, no shit. Anyway, let's continue. I'm on this fuck shit. I don't care. Anyway. So, the spirit connected with Thespian Hall has been affectionately dubbed Mrs. X. She has been captured in photographs in the theater and has been described only having gray hair, a white collared brows, and a very dark skirt. She carries a pocketbook, okay, and her face is usually blurred. The first known photograph was taken by the family of an opera singer who had been performing that night. They were able to identify the lady in the picture as their grandmother, who had recently passed and who loved the opera. Since then, she has been spotted frequently sitting in the audience during rehearsals. Mrs. X is not only the Thespian Hall, is not alone in Thespian Hall, I'm sorry. Other strange incidences include unexplained ragtime music playing in moving wig stands, which will turn themselves to face the mirrors when no one else is in the room. Okay. So, ain't nothing wrong with a little ragtime music, you know, like the old vaudeville shows and things like that. You know, which this, I mean, you're just looking at it from the outside, definitely looks like an old school, you know, almost like you'd see on like a college campus or something like that. Thespian Hall, like it's where like the drama club meets or something like that. You know, it's what it reminds me of. You know, just the opera singer, you know, having, you know, she carries the pocketbook and her face is blurred out, and the family of the opera singer identified her immediately, like, oh, that's the grandmother who passed away. And people since then have seen her frequently sitting. So maybe this isn't a case of the ghost is, you know, haunting them to scare them or haunting them to harm them. She just enjoys the opera. She enjoys the theater. She enjoys, you know, listening, you know. Because maybe some spirits do enjoy those things even in the afterlife. Right.
Right.
So how did you feel about this particular?
Again, we're getting there. I mean,
nothing's made your hair stand up on end yet.
No, we've had the episodes where, you know, we're going along and we're talking about them, and you get that one where you're like, oh man, that's it right there. That's whoo,
right?
You know, and I just hadn't got that yet. Not from this one.
We got three more left to talk about, so let's go ahead and jump right on into it. You got the next one?
Yeah, let's hope something's gonna make my hair crawl, my neck tingle or something. So next up, we're gonna talk about the Limp Mansion, and this is in St. Louis. So the interesting and charming historic mansion in St. Louis, Missouri, the Limp Mansion, was once famous for producing the best beer in the Coronas? Country.
I'm sorry, Heineken's? I'm sorry.
Those are neither neither are produced here in America,
yeah,
I believe.
I'm trying to be sarcastic. Go ahead.
Heineken's are German and Corona is
yes.
Mexican?
Yes. Right? Although now they make it in Colorado. Yeah. Who's taking...
Oh, okay. And I don't think it's called Corona anymore.
Who's taking jobs from who?
So the house was built in 1868, and it has undergone various renovations and has lost much of its ornate charm. It is thought to be still inhabited by dead Lemp family members, many of whom committed suicide at the residence.
So not just... Okay, wait. So wait. Right. So not just one particular person, many of whom, which means more than one person in the family committed suicide at in the residence.
That is correct.
If you, if I could, right. I'm sorry, so I'm going to cut you off again, but if I can relate it to wrestling, I mean, because I mean, you think about in terms of wrestling, the Von Erichs, you know, like didn't four of them commit suicide? Yeah, four brothers committed. Like Jesus Christ, all at a young age too. So let's continue because I really want to know what's going on here. Go ahead.
I don't know that I can go much further. And you'll understand why this is, it gets a little dicey here in a minute. Local legend says that the mansion is haunted by the people who used to live there. It has been included in Life magazine's most haunted hotels in America.
We're good so far.
It is said that one of Williams's sons, William is a previous owner. So his son Zeke, who was born with Down syndrome and was hidden from the public in the attic, is still seen in the house to this day. He was cruelly dubbed the monkey faced boy.
Yeah, fuck this guy, man. That's bullshit, dude. How you gonna fucking do that to a fucking baby, man? You know, so what if he has Down syndrome? You love that fucking kid just like any other kid, dude. Fuck that guy, man. Fuck that guy.
Yep. All right, so various residents of the mansion have complained about hearing ghostly knocks and phantom footsteps. Because of these stories, it was very hard to find tenants when the mansion was turned into a boarding house. While contractors were working on the mansion's renovations, workers complained about strange sounds, apparitions, their tools disappearing, and strange feelings of constantly being watched by unseen eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right? Okay. That made the hair on my neck crawl just a little bit, because I always have this I don't know, I hate just feeling like somebody's staring at me. So there's that. A lot of the workers were frightened by their experiences and they left abruptly without finishing their work.
Sounds kind of similar to the one, the Remington house out in California, how so many people didn't want to do work out there due to, you know, possible deaths.
Correct. So current employees of the Lemp Mansion have reported strange experiences, including voices and apparitions. Glasses in the bar were also reported to just fly off the shelf by themselves. Doors lock and unlock by themselves, and lights turn on and off. All right. So the Lemp family history is long and tragic. The family's patriarch was Johann Lemp, also called Adam. Time out.
Go ahead.
So my dude's name was Johann. All right. J-O-H-A-N-N. A name that's cool as shit. All right. So my dude's name was Johan, but they called him Adam? What the fuck? I mean, that's like being born, hey, on your birth certificate, your name's Richard, but we don't call you Bob. What the
fuck? Oh my God.
I mean, it just doesn't even make sense to me. So
that's how you end up with like crazy shit. Like, it's like, oh, your name, you were born Quan Ping. Okay, cool. We're gonna call you Del Toro. Like, two different ethnicities. Stop. You know. But anyway, yeah.
I don't know. So, Johan was born in 1778 in Germany, and he became a naturalized U.S. citizen in 1841. Okay. He eventually settled in St. Louis, and aside from selling groceries, he also sold beer and vinegar. Doesn't that quite kind of fall under grocery? Well, I guess nowadays it does. Maybe back then it didn't. So he started focusing solely on manufacturing and selling beer, and he was among the first people in the United States to produce German lager.
Very interesting.
That's interesting.
I mean, when I think of German lager, I'm thinking that's a Heineken, that's a Heineken. Or a Rolling Rock. Although Rolling Rocks are produced here in the United States, it's still from the German recipe and stuff. You know, it's kind of a different take. Right. You know, same brew. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So when Johan died, his son William returned from the army to take over the family brewery. Under his supervision, the brewery became the largest in the country. He had four sons of his own. Frederick, one of his sons, had significant heart problems, and he died of heart failure. After the death of his son, William Sr.'s mental health declined. Shortly after his best friend Frederick Pabst died, leading William further off the rails.
Pabst as in, oh wait, time out. Sure. Pabst as in like Pabst Blue Ribbon? Okay.
Yes. Now, I don't know if this is the like PBR guy, but it's spelt the same way.
Google search will. Let's see. Yeah. Frederick.
Yeah. So shortly after his best friend's death, William put a gun to his head and ended his emotional torment. So there's suicide number one.
Yeah, Frederick Pabst. He was the creator of Pabst Brewing Company, and he was the creator of Pabst Blue Ribbon. Yeah.
Nice. All right. So after his father's death, William Jr. took over the business. His wife Lillian was called the Lavender Lady because of her fondness of the color lavender.
Right.
Makes sense to me. They had a turbulent marriage, which ended in divorce. During Prohibition, the brewery service was severely affected, and it was sold to the International Shoe Company. So you sell a beer company to a shoe company?
Okay.
Okay. on the 29th of December, 1922, William Jr. shot himself in his office. Elsa Limp, William Jr.'s daughter, also shot herself in the head while in bed at 13 Horton's Place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Charles Limp was the last Limp to live in the mansion. He lived in the mansion with a married couple who were also his servants. And on May 10th, 1949, he shot his dog in the head and then shot himself in the head.
What'd the dog do to you, man?
I don't know. So the mansion has five classic and opulently designed suites that are named after five of the mansion's previous occupants. You have the Lavender Suite, which was named after William Jr.'s wife, Lillian. It is a three-room suite that comes with a bathroom, a bedroom, and a breakfast sitting room. You have the William Limp Suite. Also, and it also has the splendor of America's Gilded Age. The Charles Limp Suite has some of the most beautiful furnishings, which come from the post-Depression period, as well as the Art Decor period. The Elsa Limp Suite has a great view of the Mississippi River and the St. Louis skyline, and it can be found on the mansion's top floor. Lastly, the Frederick and Louis Suites were once servant quarters. They have been since remodeled and are now mirror images of each other. Yep. The Limp Mansion's Grand Hall is a banquet hall that still has the original hard maple floors. It's located on the corner of Cherokee Street and Limp Avenue. So they have a street named after them that family does.
Yep.
It would make a great place for various events. The beautiful patio and gazebo would make an ideal place for an outdoor wedding. Both facilities can hold as few as 20 people or as many as 300 guests. Limp Mansion has been, it has wedding packages to choose from, and it is also now offering the loft for private parties. It can easily seat a maximum of 150 people. The loft was once used for the brewery's perch and horses. Yep. It doesn't say how much it costs. A lot of times they'll tell you how much it costs to stay there, but they have upgraded and they have certain amenities such as air conditioning, refrigerators, hair dryers, a balcony, patio, fireplace, television, and internet access.
They probably put that in probably, 2014 or whatever. I don't know. Throwing a number out.
Right. So how'd you feel about that one?
When you hear the horrible history, it's almost, it's like, man, it's, first of all, fuck this William guy for just, treating Zeke like shit. Fuck him, first and foremost. Hearing it, reading about it, I heard a lot of good stories and stuff. The workers hearing strange sounds, apparitions, feelings of constantly being watched. The doors locking themselves and things like that. The history of it is very, very interesting, and it's very tragic and it's very sad. But from a perspective of just being a haunted place, it's haunted, but it's one of those things where it's almost like the story seems more tragic than scary. And the fact that even with, all the stories of hearing the phantom footsteps and the ghostly knocks and things like that, things that, and again, this is a place where people still go and it's still open. So is it fabricated? You know what I mean? Is it, again, more of a fabrication? Not to say that these spirits don't exist, but to amplify them the way that they would possibly do. You know what I mean? I'm still trying to figure out why the hell you would call Johan Adam. Also, that's another one that I'm confused about too. But
yeah, I'm still there on that. But it just doesn't.
You almost had a good one. You did. You almost had a good one. You were like, oh, this could be something. Almost. I do feel it's very interesting that the guy who created Pabst Blue Ribbon and Colt 45 and all those malt liquors and drinks, you know, had, you know, some dealings with it, because this is, because Pabst Blue Ribbon really wasn't like, you know, because Milwaukee is what's is best, is when you think of Milwaukee, you think of Pabst Blue Ribbon, you know, because that, because the Pabst Theater is in Milwaukee, you know, so that's what people normally think of when they think Pabst Blue Ribbon. They don't think Missouri, you know, when you think of Missouri, you think of Anheuser-Busch, you know, you think of, you know, that the beer capital is St. Right. Louis, you know, because of the breweries that are there, you know, and hell, since the creation of IPAs and all these different types of beers and, you know, wheat lagers and all this different, hell, Sam Adams has like 5,000 different flavors of alcohol beer, you know, but for the history of it to kind of be intertwined in there, that was interesting to me. I found it more interesting than scary, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's me. I definitely got zero like paranormal feeling about that, but
yeah,
I mean, that's just me.
It's interesting, but it's not like, oh shit, I'm gonna have to worry about going to sleep tonight. You know what I mean? That's one of those things. Not like it.
Right. Yep. Definitely. Yeah. But that's
hopefully
it.
The last two will be interesting. So the next one is Zombie Road, and this is also in St. Louis, Missouri. Now, Zombie Road is perhaps one of the most fascinating and, of course, one of the most haunted places in Missouri. It was officially known as Lawler Ford Road. It has since been known as Zombie Road since the 1950s. There are many chilling tales that are associated with the road, including one about a so-called zombie killer. He was supposed to have been a creepy loner who lived in a shack in the woods and would attack young lovers who came to his spot to get some alone time. It is not known if there is any truth to this particular legend. Other chilling tales about Zombie Road include ghost sightings, vanishings, and strange noises. One of the creepiest stories is that of Della Hamilton McCothell, I think I'm saying that name correctly, the wife of a local judge who died in 1876 when she was hit by a train. Yeah, it is said that she now haunts Zombie Road. However, what Zombie Road is most famous for is the shadow people. There have been several photographs captured by credible witnesses which show large numbers of shadow people standing in the woods by the side of Zombie Road. These shadow people are believed to be the souls of Native American orphans who were tortured while at a nearby orphanage in 1913. So we're going... I mean... anytime you're dealing with any type of, you know, Native Americans, you know, indigenous people here in this country, you know, you automatically make the assumption, okay, is this on some type of burial ground that we don't know about, because, you know, generally if you disturb a place of rest, that's always a recipe for disaster. You know, but the lady who says to haunt the road who was hit by a train. Here's the thing that's bugging me, though. It says one of the creepiest stories, but it doesn't say, it just says she was hit by a train. What's creepy about getting hit by a train? You know, let me, matter of fact, I have it in front of me. Fuck it. I'm just going to look it up. I'm going to dive in head first into this. Let's see. Della Hamilton, here you go, bam, right there. Okay, Zombie Road. Oh, hey, here we go. This is at puzzleboxhorror.com. Let's see. It says the legend become more terrifying than a real story. Okay, this one might freak me out a little bit. Hopefully this doesn't pop up any crazy. Yep, already doing it. Oh, damn, freaking pop. Okay, hold on. Yeah, I gotta get out of that. Crap. Anyway, but it says that, it just says she was hit by a friggin' train. Like, let me see if I, let me try to look it up again. Let's see. There you go, Delahanna McCaughan. Let's see. See, haunted. Yeah, we're already here. Yeah, but why is it considered creepy? Why is it considered haunted? All right, let me click on this one. Onlyinyourstate.com. Let's see. It says the story. Yeah, okay. I've already read that. Okay, it says one of the most spine-tingling. May be the frequently retold story of the ghost of a person who was hit by a train and now haunts the area. This legend becomes more chilling than the real story of Della Hamilton McCaughle. Mrs. McCaughle was the wife of a local judge who was hit by a train and died in 1876. Since there is no other records of anyone being killed by a train in the area at the time, it is widely believed that Mrs. McCaughle was may just have been an actual. Okay, so basically they're saying because there was no record of anybody getting hit by a train, that basically she didn't exist? That's what I'm gathering from it? I don't know. It seems too... I don't know, Bubba. It just seems too... Like, not... I mean, how was it creepy? That's the thing that's bugging me. Like, you're just saying she got hit by a train. Like, how is it buggy? How is it creepy?
Right.
That's
what was spectacular. I mean, I'm sorry she got hit by a train, but what was spectacular about it? Did a unknown force push her in front of this
did
train?
Did the judge have her murdered? Like, you know. This is something I'm probably going to have to look up during the daytime or something, because I don't know. But the shadow people, that's the one that kind of like, that's a little bit out there, you know? I mean, because anytime you're driving at night or something, you're seeing shadow, you're like, oh, shit, that's a little bit dark. You know, like, oh, shit, did I see somebody? Like, it's always freaky, especially when you're driving at night by yourself around these back-ass roads. Right. Yeah, it's always freaky. But anyway,
exactly. Right. Well, let's move on to the last one.
Now, this one should definitely put some. This one should definitely put some. You know, some hair on end.
Of course,
my head's freshly shaved, and I still feel like I got some hair up there. You know, something. Go ahead, Chip.
All right. So one of the most infamous hauntings in Missouri. Has to be that of the Exorcist House. All right, so pretty much everyone has heard of the Exorcist, either from the book that was written by William Peter Blatty or from the movie adaptation by William Friedkin.
Right?
What some people don't know is that the Exorcist is based on a true story. So the true story is that a teenage boy who has been dubbed Roland Doe to protect his identity was living in Maryland. While in Maryland, he was playing with a Ouija board, causing him to be possessed by a demon.
That's why you don't fuck with Ouija boards.
You don't fuck with them things. It is alleged that some of the bruising on his chest from the attacks perpetrated by the demon spelled out Lewis, L-O-U-I-S, leading the family to believe that he should be taken to stay with relatives in St. Louis. Some people say that the house on Roanoke Drive where he stayed is still haunted, perhaps stained by the boy's possession.
Yep, I ain't gonna be able to go sleep tonight. Thanks, Chip.
Man.
But yeah, that's, I mean, for the movie The Exorcist to be, I mean, it's such an iconic movie. It's such an iconic, especially the certain scenes and Linda Blair with her face, you know, made up the way that it was and things like that. And the evil looks that she would give people, you know, the whole thing with fighting with the demons, like, your mother sucks cocks in hell, you know, you've seen the movie. Yep. And the fact that, you know, the fact that it was based on a real life case of possession, and a lot of people, you know, they poo-poo on it. They shit all over it because they feel like, okay, well, demonic possession, you know, can't be. I'm pretty sure it shit like this is very much capable of happening, you know, especially when you fuck with a Ouija board. But anyway.
Right. So, I looked up another thing here. And so in mid-1949, several newspaper articles printed anonymous reports of an alleged possession and exorcism. The source of these reports is thought to be the family's former pastor, Luther Miles Schultz. According to one account, a total of 48 people witnessed this exorcism. 9 of them were Jesuits.
What?
Jesuits, J-E-S-U-I-T-S.
I don't know what that word means. I don't know what a Jesuit is. I've never even heard of that. Oh, man.
I don't know. While you're looking that up, according to Arthur Thomas B. Allen, Jesuit priest Father Walter H. Halloran was one of the last surviving eyewitnesses of the events and participated in the exorcism. Allen wrote that a diary kept by attending priest Bob Raymond J. Bishop, hold on, detailed the exorcism performed on the pseudonymously identified Roland Doe, also known as Robbie. Speaking in 2013, Allen emphasized the definitive proof that the boy, known only as Robbie, was possessed by malevolent spirits is unattainable. According to Allen, Halloran also expressed his skepticism about potential paranormal events before his death. When asked in an interview to make a statement verifying that the boy had actually been demonically possessed, Halloran responded saying, "No, I cannot go on record. I never made an absolute statement about the things because I don't feel I was qualified."
I actually looked up, I spelled it the best way that I could. J-E-S-U-I-T. Yep. Is that the correct spelling? Okay, then that's what I thought it was. Correct. It's Jesuit. It's the Jesuit priests. They're the ones who are, it's part of the Catholic Church. It's basically the Society of Jesus. It's a religious order by the Catholic Church headquarters in Rome. And it was founded. Basically what it was is that the Jesuit priests were the ones who were basically create the Gregorian calendar, the calendar that we all currently use today. It was developed by the Catholic Church in the 1580s by Jesuit priests to fix the problems that the Julian calendar had done. Because the Julian calendar, the reason why we don't use the Julian calendar anymore is because the Julian calendar was basically they every 4 years they would throw in. They only had like a leap day, you know, but it was putting too many days into the calendar. And from what I read, I watch a lot of weird shit on YouTube. Neil deGrasse Tyson was the one who actually was telling this story about how the Jesuit priests created the idea, because when we talk about a year, how long does it take the Earth to go around the sun? It takes a year, but it turns out that we're not actually calculating how long the Earth goes around the sun. We're calculating how long it takes the Earth to repeat its seasons, and the amount of time it takes the Earth to go around the sun and the amount of time it takes for the Earth to repeat its seasons is slightly different. That's why you have to have a leap day every 4 years. And then he broke it down scientifically or whatever. So yeah, Jesuit. That's what I thought you meant. Well, when you said that, because at first I didn't know what you were talking about. And I was like, oh, that's who the people who he was talking about. So yeah, so I mean, these are people. Would you say these are the people who, like, anytime you like watching a movie about possession and exorcism and things, those are the people who come to cast away the demons out of people's bodies, right? Maybe. That's crazy, man.
Yes,
it all intertwines in some way, shape, or form.
So there's more about it that's interesting. So according to Thomas B. Allen, after Aunt Harriet's death, the family experienced strange noises, furniture moving on its own, and ordinary objects such as vases flying or levitating when the boy was nearby. The family turned to their Lutheran pastor, Luther Miles Schultz, for help. Long interested in parapsychology, Schultz arranged for the boy to spend a night in his home in order to observe him. When parapsychologist J.B. Ryan learned that Schultz claimed he witnessed household objects and furniture seemingly moving by themselves, Ryan wondered if Schultz unconsciously exaggerated some of these facts. Schultz advised the boy's parents to see a Catholic priest. And according to the traditional story, the boy then underwent a number of exorcisms. Edward Hughes, a Roman Catholic priest, conducted an exorcism on Robbie at Georgetown University Hospital, a Jesuit institute. During the exorcism, the boy allegedly slipped one of his hands out of the restraints, broke a bed spring from an under the mattress, and used it as an impromptu weapon, slashing the priest's arm and resulting in the exorcism ritual being halted. Yeah.
Well, that's insane.
It gets, a little. So the family traveled to St. Louis, where Robbie's cousin contacted one of the professors of St. Louis University, Bishop, who in turn spoke to William S. Bodern, an associate of College Church. Together, both priests visited Robbie in his relative's home, where they allegedly observed a shaking bed, flying objects, the boy speaking in a guttural voice, and exhibiting an aversion to anything sacred. Bodern was granted permission from the Archbishop to perform yet another exorcism. So the exorcism then took place at the Alexian Brothers Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri, which was later razed, R-A-Z-E-D. Before the exorcism ritual began, another priest, Walter Holleran, was called to the psychiatric wing of the hospital, where he was asked to assist Bodern. William Van Rue, a third Jesuit priest, was also there to assist. Halloran stated that during the scene, words such as evil and hell, along with other various marks, appeared on the teenager's body. Allegedly, the litany of the saints portion of the exorcism ritual, the boy's mattress began to shake, and moreover, Robbie broke Halloran's nose during the process. Halloran told a reporter that after the rite was over, the anonymous subject of the exorcism went on to lead a rather ordinary life.
Rather ordinary. Rather ordinary.
That's what it said.
Not ordinary, but rather ordinary.
Yep.
As in, like, yeah, I'm still gonna, this shit's gonna affect me mentally for the rest of my life, but rather ordinary.
Right. Ordinary, yeah, as it, yeah, can be. So in his 93 book Possessed: The True Story of an Exorcism, author Thomas B. Allen offered the consensus of today's experts that Robbie was just a deeply disturbed boy and nothing supernatural slash paranormal ever happened to him. Arthur Mark Osesnik, and I'm probably not saying that right, but he questioned many of the supernatural claims associated with the story, proposing that Robbie Doe was simply a spoiled, disturbed bully who threw deliberate tantrums to get attention or to get out of school. He reported that Halloran, who was present at that exorcism, never heard the boy's voice change, and he thought the boy merely mimicked Latin words he heard clergymen say, rather than gaining a sudden ability to speak Latin. Opsenik reported that when marks were found on the boy's body, Halloran failed to check the boy's fingernails to see if he'd made the marks himself. Opsenik also questioned the story of Hughes' attempts to exorcise the boy and his subsequent injury, saying he could find no evidence that such an episode had ever actually occurred. And also, during his investigation, Opsenik discovered that the exorcism did not take place at 3210 Bunker Hill Road in Mount Rainier, Maryland. The boy never lived in Mount Rainier. The boy's home was in Cottage City, Maryland. Much of the commonly accepted information about the story is based on hearsay. It is not documented and it was never fact-checked. There is no evidence that Father E. Albert Hughes visited the boy's home, had him admitted to Georgetown Hospital, requested that the boy be restrained at the hospital, attempted an exorcism of the boy at Georgetown Hospital, or was injured by the boy during an exorcism or at any other time. There is ample evidence refuting claims that Father Hughes suffered an emotional breakdown and disappeared from the Cottage City community.
So basically, it's either they took a lot of time to either cover their ass and cover up this story about what really happened, or shit didn't really happen the way we thought it happened a long, long time ago. So, I guess the question now becomes, who's right?
I would say it's a matter of an opinion at this point.
Although, the story did create one of the most iconic horror movies in the history of cinema. You know, so if this particular incident hadn't happened for right or wrong reasons, you know, which, I mean, has there been a movie or a documentary debunking this particular story?
You know, no. So this exorcism inspired the 1971 novel The Exorcist, which in turn was adapted into a 73 horror film of the same title. The case was inspired, it also inspired the 2000 movie Possessed, which is said to be closer to the story in Allen's book than the movie The Exorcist was. There was a documentary of the case titled In the Grip of Evil. Another documentary was made in 2010 entitled The Haunted Boy, The Secret Diary of the Exorcist, where a group of investigators travel to the location in question and uncover the diary that is said to be kept by William S. Bodern.
That's crazy. Yeah. Crazy. Crazy, crazy. Okay, so I guess with that being said, out of all the ones we've talked about tonight, would you say this one is definitely the most interesting one?
Oh, this is definitely the most interesting one and the one that has the most information.
You know, kind of like, I mean, if I had more information about the Zombie Road, I could probably make the case and say, yeah, this could be a little bit more creepy, but I don't have any information. I mean, a creepy story about getting hit by a bus is not a creepy story, you know. But also, I mean, the Lump Mansion was also the Limp Mansion was also a good one. It was tragic, you know, for the most part. I don't know. Ravenswood makes me want to go party with this, you know, chick. You know, she's got this lavish party, you know. But definitely the Exorcist house is the one house that a lot of people are going to look to. Because I would say out of all of them, yeah, this one's definitely the creepiest one. But definitely the one that scares people the most.
I would say not only is it the creepiest, but it's also the most interesting in that you have accounts from people that were there that say, hey, this really happened. And then you have people that have done research in later years that are saying, hey, no, this shit didn't happen this way. It happened a completely different way, or yeah, that's the one thing
for me is that, you know, you finally have because you hear the stories for so many years, and then when you hear somebody say, well, it didn't happen exactly the way that happened, obviously your first instinct is to say, okay, wait a minute, who the fuck are you to say that it didn't happen? What proof do you have? You become very skeptical. But then once they offer you their proof or their, you know, opinion or whatever, then it kind of makes you think a little bit, like, man, could that have really happened the way he described it? You know, is that what we believed right. Fabrication all this time? It fucks with your mental a little bit. So, but yeah, this one definitely for me was the most interesting. If there was any other guess, right? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of The Hauntings of. I believe the next haunting, I think we're still in the M's. I think Montana's next, if I'm not mistaken.
See, that will be the first episode of the new year. And yes, it will be The Hauntings of Montana.
The first episode of 2021 will be The Hauntings of Montana. But before we get to that episode, of course, we still got Are You Ready for Some Football that's going to be dropping every Thursday. We're getting close. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. The last 2 weeks of the season coming up soon. And looking forward to a lot of the upcoming season. I believe next week we're going to be dropping our third rock retrospective, if I'm not mistaken. That's not next week.
No, that's not next week. That is, nope, the third rock retrospective.
Okay, so it'll be the second
January
episode.
The 11th.
You got. I'm trying to figure out. So what is this? So what is next? What is next week's episode then?
Next week we're going to be talking. It's going to come out just a couple of days after Christmas, but we're going to be talking favorite.
There you go. Yeah. So it's our Christmas, or it's our annual Christmas episode, but instead of it dropping on Christmas Day, because obviously, yeah, it makes sense for us to, like, why should we bother the hell out of you guys on Christmas Day? Unless you guys want to listen to us on Christmas Day, and for that, we appreciate it. But yeah, a couple of days after Christmas wouldn't be that bad. You know, we'll drop, you know.
Well, we're dropping, so we'll be dropping the Week 16 NFL picks on Christmas Eve, and if we dropped a Christmas episode, right. It would be back-to-back episodes.
Give you a couple of days to listen to a few episodes. That makes sense. All righty. And, man, that's a lot of cool things. We got a brand new logo. Hope you guys enjoy. We've had a lot of great feedback on the new logo. Everybody likes it. Everyone says it looks clean. It looks more professional. Like, I don't know what was wrong with the skulls with the beards and the beanies and the headphones. But you know what? We do appreciate the feedback, as always.
Yep, I absolutely love the OG logo. Don't fret, it's not going anywhere. You'll still be able to buy merch with that logo on it at least for the next 30 days. After that, the merch with the OG logo will be retired and only brought out at special, very, very special times of the year, maybe once a year, maybe once every couple of years. Yeah. So definitely get your merch with the OG logo soon. Merch with the new logo will be going up very soon. We're looking at adding new merch, not just t-shirts. We're looking at getting face masks and book bags and phone cases, pillows, you name it. We want you to be able to get
exactly
your and, hands on
where
it.
Where can these fine people go to get this new merch?
The details haven't been ironed out yet. Got a couple of places that we're looking at using. So as soon as we have the new merch site up and running, we'll definitely
Can people still go to storefrontier.com and
storefrontier.com/movementradio to get all your t-shirt
absolutely
designs.
Yes, indeed, absolutely. And shout out to everyone who's been helping us out with this venture. Shout out to Roger. He couldn't be here with us tonight, but you'll definitely hear him this upcoming Thursday on Are You Ready for Some Football? He's been helping us out so much. And of course, we didn't get a chance to say this before, but we got another episode of An Evening With coming up very soon with our good friend AC Hutchison. He's going to be joining us. We haven't picked the exact date for that one yet, but when we drop it, it's going to be pretty good. Okay, Chip's got this shit written down already. I need to go in the Airtable and actually look into it. But for whatever reason, it doesn't pop up on my calendar. I don't know if I need to add something or figure something out. I don't know. You got to, as soon as we're done with this episode, you got to hook me up and let me know what's going on. Being said, though, ladies and gentlemen, again, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of The Hauntings Of. We'll see you guys right back here on Thursday for Are You Ready for Some Football? And right here next week with another episode of Movement Radio. Chip, let's hit him with the outro.
Please do not leave without leaving a like, comment, share, and subscribe.
Make sure you follow us on all of our social media, platform. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Make sure you go to the YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you click that bell to get notified of our latest videos. And I am Talon Williams.
I am Chip Hazard.
We out.
And this is Movement Radio.
This is Movement Radio.